I'm not giving a concert. Not long ago, famous physician was asked, at what period in life does the aging process begin in the human being? And the doctor replied very quickly, the day of birth. And this is essentially true. And it means that the process of life control has to begin early. And failure to get a good beginning is likely to result in a complicated termination. Not long ago, we also had another side of this problem. A lady wrote in. She was in her late 80s, and she wanted a 5-year subscription to our journal, beginning now. She had the right attitude. It is the individual who is looking constantly toward the future who has the best chance of extending life to its maximum possible degree. Also, it is necessary to develop early a philosophy of life. Life has to be planned. And to plan life means that we have to develop a working philosophy that not only takes care of us through the various years of youth and maturity, but which prepares us to face retirement and later problems with peace and security and optimism. We have to find our place in the universal plan of things if we are really going to have a successful and purposeful life. To drift along from year to year, to live only for the moment, to have no broad plan is as dangerous to our moral lives as lack of financial planning is detrimental to our economic security. Security rests in a long-range pattern, a plan that we develop at a comparatively young age, mature, develop, unfold, enrich as we go along, which prepares us for a useful existence, but also prepares us for those changes which are part of the universal plan. All things in nature work together for good, and the life of the human being is a life intended to be a success. And it is only when we make failures out of it by our own misunderstandings that lives are wasted or the natural maturing of life is delayed or impaired. So we start in by trying to decide what we are going to do with a span of years that is actually our prime asset. It is that which gives us the opportunity and the privilege to become significant persons. All of the different steps of life must make sense in themselves and work together for a common end. Obviously, when we are very young, we may not know our intention. We may not understand our responsibilities and potentials. But at this stage, we have great dependence upon parental leadership. And the successful life begins, if possible, with strong parental guidance in those years of formation. It is important to the person that the beginnings of life are associated with a good philosophy for living, and that the young person has the proper example from the elders around him and also from the society to which he belongs. As it is usually difficult to condition society, it becomes ever more important that family, home, and home circle should be as secure and meaningful as possible. Obviously, we have to begin our material existence with a certain degree of physical ignorance. We are not prepared for the changes that the years will bring. We are not prepared for social change and the change of environment and world customs and patterns and policies. But we are capable from within ourselves of adjusting to that which is new or relinquishing that which is old with a good grace. We can make these adjustments. It all rests in ourselves. One of the earliest problems that we all face is education. And this problem becomes more acute every day. This particular generation in which we now live suffers rather severely from over-education. We are over-schooled and not over-intelligent. We are not given the type of training that prepares us for a civilization or citizenship. Therefore, schooling for most is going to be a rather dismal experience. It is going to be too pressureful, too intense, and too highly organized to give the individual the proper background for personal living. But it is necessary to accept some type of the educational pattern in order to prepare for adjustment in society. But the educational adjustment, like every other adjustment of life, must be impelled by something above an economic pattern. The individual who lives and dies simply in terms of economics also frustrates the purpose for himself. We are not here to be wealthy. We are not here to dominate other people. We are here to be useful to ourselves and those around us. We are entitled to a reasonable reward for our endeavors, and if our earnings justify, we are entitled to a secure economic pattern. But we should never build our lives on the success formula alone. We should never hope that we are going to achieve pleasure, comfort, happiness, or security on an economic level alone. One of our problems today is the loss of overtones, the loss of those ideals and principles which ensoul labor, which dignify effort, and give purpose to existence. Always in our daily living, there must be some motivations, some dreams, some aspirations, which bring out from within ourselves a higher level of personal intelligence than that which comes from economic adjustments alone. So we have to build something which we might say the ensouling of a pattern. Our physical lives are very much like physical bodies. They are instruments and vehicles. As the body without the soul is an inert mass, so society without a soul is doomed to disaster and sorrow. Every concept, every belief, every policy of life must be ensouled by principles. There must be a dream behind every career, a hope behind every action, and a sincere desire to help behind the whole pattern of our careers in this world. So we try to think in terms of giving meaning to skills and knowledge, dedications to the various activities with which we are involved. As we go along through the busy and summit years of our living, we are already involved in processes of adjustment. And among the most important of these periods of adjustment for many persons is the problem of economic adjustment, an adjustment to a future which is involved in a retirement program. The individual generally thinks of retirement as release from the burden of economic pressures and responsibilities. Many persons who retire have resolved and dedicated within themselves the conviction that from that point on they are not going to do anything. It is going to be one unbroken rest. And this unbroken rest becomes a kind of sleep that is burdened with numerous nightmares. The last thing the individual can safely look forward to is excessive leisure. If he looks forward to freedom from all responsibility and effort, and considers that having made his contribution to his world, he is now entitled to relax indefinitely and drift along without any major purpose or project, and that this is a reward for a life of labor, he's wrong, very wrong, and will be in trouble from the time this conviction takes over. No individual in this world can ever be happy unless he knows how to use leisure time. Leisure in the busy years of life is at a premium. But as the individual approaches the end of a business or economic career, leisure looms large. And I know a number of persons today who are struggling with the problems of leisure. They do not know how to rest without simply going into a kind of premature age. Leisure to them simply means to sit around, play cards, gossip with their friends, take occasional trips here or there, and for the most part, do nothing. Others, with a little more ingenuity, decide that this is a good period to catch up with a long-hoped-for time of reading. Many individuals firmly believe that as soon as they are free from the burdens of business, they are going to become students of life. Some do. But after a little time, this also begins to fade out. It is not enough to really attract the total person. Another solution, of course, is to drift into perpetual television programs. This, however, gradually becomes an obnoxious situation. No one can spend the closing years of a busy life glued to a television set. Yet for so many, there is no plan. There is no project. It just drifts. This drifting is largely modified by external circumstances. The individual follows a line of least resistance and does what seems to be next and pays no attention to any general program or purpose. This is in itself, of course, a waste of life. For a person to labor hard and industriously for 40 years and then do nothing with what he has learned except to hope to forget it is not a consummation greatly to be desired. It is far more important to begin to contemplate the consequences of these years of experience and adjustments which we've had to make. Now, through the years, of course, we bring a whole group of personalities, each one with different emphasis, each one with a different attitude towards experience. Some people, from the day of their first job, are badly adjusted. They resent work. To them, the end of work is the end of trouble. And when they can finally close the door on the last job that they hold, this is a reward. But this is because they were poorly adjusted in the first place. They did not make proper use of the years in which employment could have been informative, educational, or a challenge to the release of internal potentials. Another problem that we have to face is that most people do not realize that they have potentials. They go to school, perhaps they become involved in some trade, craft, or profession, and they settle down to it. It never occurs to them to consider the total person, that there is within each of us something, sometimes many different things, waiting to express themselves, waiting to unfold and grow and inspire and direct conduct. Unless we make some use of internal potential, we die with the same soul power locked in us with which we were born. Nothing has happened inside except this gradual, we might say, adjustment, a rather pathetic type of adjustment to the inevitables of external existence. If we are really going to amount to something as far as our own lives are concerned, we have to begin to consider potential. And to most folks today, potential is in the form of avocational activity. Once having become set in a business or profession or trade, which requires a large part of our stamina, we do not feel like we can carry several jobs at one time. So we generally develop some type of avocational interest, an avocational interest that we justify because we feel that it is contributing in some way to our well-being. Such avocational interest sometimes involves sports. Sometimes it impels us to study some art or trade or craft in spare time. Sometimes it turns into a love of gardening or a love of travel or the desire to hike along desert roads. We have all kinds of avocational activities, which for the most part we exercise because we feel that they contribute some way to a balanced life, that they get us away from the pressure of things, which if we did not have these breaks would become more than we can take. But many times these avocational interests are very little better than a waste of time themselves. The individual is, in attempting to escape the routine and monotony of his job, also seeks to escape from himself. He tries to get away from the challenge of his own internal life. He does nothing to enrich his outer existence by calling upon inner resource. He just drifts from one type of external adjustment to another. This is not enough to give him the type of life that is valuable as he gets older. He is going to reach maturity and retirement age living only on the surface of himself. He is going to live almost completely dependent upon environment and with little or no control of his own life. He is going to drift from one comparatively unimportant activity to another. And the importance locked within himself is never going to get a chance to express. He is just going to continue to live on the surface of his own mind, on the surface of his own emotions, and on the surface of his own physical career. It is wise, then, to try to realize that by looking around us today, we see the tragedy of surface living. We see how inadequate it is to have no depth dimension in our own consciousness. We are not able to call upon internal strength when need arises. Therefore, we depend more and more upon economic security. We depend more and more upon the political world around us to protect our interests. The individual does not protect the primary interests of his own life. And these interests are all of them involved in personal growth, not in adjustment to an economic situation. Economics there must be, but the economic survival is unimportant unless there is something in the individual that is important enough to require, demand, and justify survival. Without these inner purposes, the continuance of physical existence is little more than a tragic monotony. So as we go along, we also begin to look for something. Sometimes we call it a religion. Sometimes we call it a philosophy of life. Sometimes it is little better than a series of personal convictions based upon experience. Now, personal convictions can be very important, and experience is important, if the convictions and the experience are valid. Too often, however, personal experience is so highly involved in personal attitudes that the individual is defending his mistakes and using experience to justify his own weaknesses, unless he is wise enough to rise above this possibility. the development of a philosophy of life which is based entirely upon self-justification doesn't get us very far. We often are much worse off because of it. Any life that is embittered because personal unhappiness has occurred has failed to make use of experience. But out of this embitterment develops a negative philosophy of life which perpetuates the embitterment itself and applies it to new situations where it should not be involved. Therefore, it is usually wisest for the individual to develop an interest in some system of thought that has stood the test of time. Some belief, some philosophy, some ethical code, some moral structure that has not developed entirely within himself, but for which he feels internal need. Thus, many persons have found, as they get older, an increasing need for religious insight. They want some form of spiritual security. They want to have certain faith in themselves and in the world in which they live. Young people create or try to create lives of their own. Older persons depend very largely upon faith, the realization or belief in values which are beyond and above the commonplace and everyday experiences. Faith in something more important than ourselves is essential to a mature life. No individual is so completely self-sufficient that he can fail to make an adjustment with that which is superior to himself. The completely self-sufficient person is usually in serious trouble and often becomes a negative factor in family and social life. Having come to the realization that we need something that is going to steady and balance our personal conduct, we have all kinds of possibilities. We have several great systems of ethics in the world. We have several great religions, which in one way or another can be serviceable. Then comes the problem of trying to adjust to one of these. In early life, most people are rebels. They are rebels against family, against home, against the world in many cases. And the more adolescent they are, the more intense the rebellion. It requires some time, therefore, for the individual to outgrow his resentments against things he does not approve of. These resentments are, some of them, rather well justified. But in other instances, they are simply personal pressures of likes and dislikes taking over control of a life. Where such is the case, the life itself is seriously damaged. Sometime, usually in early middle life, often when children arise, the problem of an ethical system or a moral spiritual code begins to intrude itself. Most persons would like to have their children grow up with good principles, high morals, proper ethics, and with a certain amount of cultural gentility. Most parents today are being disappointed in this area because of the lack of planning either in the family or in society for the directing of the activities of the child or young person's temperament. So the search for some type of spiritual directive comes in. Many individuals find this directive by simply going back to the faiths of their fathers, faiths which to some others might seem rather shallow. But if they meet the need of the person, if they give that person a legitimate reason for existence, if they give that person the courage to meet the day with a better attitude, then that particular belief is suitable to that person. I think it is always a mistake to discredit the faiths and beliefs of other people, so long as these faiths and beliefs are ethically sound. This type of situation divides people into many groups, some with better understanding, with deeper realization of experience. Some who have grown a little more through the years of activity find the need for a deeper and more positive conviction. They want some answers to questions. They want to know more, and they want to have the right to discriminate. They want to allow the mind to censor their beliefs so that the mind tells them what is reasonable and what is not reasonable. In this particular procedure, however, the heart must also be involved. An intellectual religion is not always a comfort in time of trouble. There must also be a very definite emotional factor, something that gives faith and hope and love and kindness. There must be a veneration for the good. There must be a realization within the self of the magnitude of the universal plan to which we belong. The more the individual advances, the further his thoughts develop, the less room he has in his life for negative religious attitudes or for systems of culture which threaten or disturb or demolish the natural optimism of the person. So the working with religion has as its final end that we gain a general conception of why we are here and where we are going. A religion must give us not only stability for now, but a proper attitude toward the future. An attitude which enables us to face the future with a good hope. This, again, is a matter to a large degree of faith. But gradually, faith, enriched by contemplation of personal experience, becomes so factual that it is seldom questioned. In fact, we have to accept nearly every important belief that we have, spiritual or materialistic, upon faith, because the final answers to the questions that we all ask can only be internally experienced. They cannot be classified and taught to all human beings, because each person has needs of their own. And to these needs, all faiths are adjusted. That's why throughout the world, the great religions are very largely nationalistic or racial, because they belong to times and places and to people with certain experiences of life. And many of the generalities of these faiths are equally valid everywhere. But some particulars, some special doctrines, seem to be largely purposed towards local conditions and periods of history. Having come gradually to the realization of the need for some type of internal culture, the person must then begin to consider what this is going to cost. Not so much in terms of money, because he can borrow the books from the library or talk with his friends. It isn't necessarily a financial problem, but it is an adjustment problem. The individual, in order to gain anything from knowledge, must live according to what he learns. And this is a challenge that many are not able to accept. The result is that there are great numbers of persons who have acknowledged very enlightened systems of religion, morality and ethics, but have never been able to live them. The fact that the person accepts a faith does not mean that their disposition is markedly changed. It does not mean that they overcome negative habits, nor does it mean that they are better adjusted with their friends, families, and society. Great many believers have never been able to apply their belief. For this reason, a kind of new believing has come into focus, and that is salvation by the acknowledgement of values. The individual says, "I believe in honor. I believe in honesty." If he makes this formal statement, this is the basis of his salvation. The practice of the honesty does not come into the picture. This means that many persons claim strong religious allegiances who have never lived according to the things they claim to believe. The greatest, of course, of this pattern that we recognize is the Christian problem of the fact that nearly all Christians accept the divine importance of the Sermon on the Mount, but very few people succeed in living it. Most persons find need of correction in the lives of others, but leave their own lives uncorrected. We're building, however, along a line of thoughtfulness. We come toward those years where what we have done inside begins to be very important on the outside. If we have built a reasonably good philosophy of life, if we have solved certain dilemmas of our own thinking, if we have made reasonable corrections of excessive faults of our own, we can come gradually into the mature years, years of contemplation and thoughtfulness with a well-balanced internal life. We are not any longer subject to the tempests and torrents of attitudes which have afflicted us perhaps in younger days. We are smoothing out. Now, smoothing out, in the case of the individual, has many values. One of the most common values of the soothing process is health. The individual who conserves his energies and his resources has a greater probability of protecting and preserving health to a maximum period of time. The individual who is constantly emotionally stressed, who is unable to adjust to the daily problems of life, but carries into his older years an eternal fretfulness, is less likely to enjoy a retirement or to maintain friendships and comradeships along the way. More important than this, however, is that it is the quiet, well-ordered life that makes the greatest demand upon internal resource. The person who has quieted down the pressures and excesses of attitudes and emotions, in this quietude, has a direct contact with himself. The individual who has gotten out of his own way is therefore in a condition to release the greatest amount of his own internal content. The quiet person is more or less in constant meditation. He is in a condition to respond to inner ideals with practically no external interference. If there are extrasensory faculties suitable to be adjusted at that time, the person becomes aware of them. He finds that he is able to call upon his own spiritual resources, that he is also able to understand what he never understood before. Because the natural point in the philosophy is that the older years are years of wisdom. And anyone who is not able to come into these years wiser than he was earlier in life has simply neglected self-culture. And even then, it is possible sometimes to remedy or correct the situation by using the older years to enrich and ennoble the way of life that we know and understand. So the quiet life is the life which gives us the greatest potential for adjustment to eternal realities. The less of ourselves there is in our way of life, the more of the divine well may come through and be part of our daily experience. Now, this is not mental laziness. It is not the individual who has no thoughts or is completely unaware of his own internal. It is rather a quietude and an increasing dependence upon those ideals, philosophical truths, and religious convictions that have been instilled in earlier years. Now, as we go along on this particular process, there are a lot of other factors that have to be taken into at least passing consideration. The one thing that we must all realize is that what the average person really wants to accumulate wealth for is in order to have freedom to do what he pleases. And therefore, if he is wealthy without internal maturity, he pleases to do a great many foolish things. He is not able to control the reward of his own wealth. He has the means, but lacking the integrities, finds the wealth a very heavy burden on him. As Buddha so well pointed out, wealth is the heaviest burden that the flesh must bear. And while most people would be very willing to carry the load, they are not so happy after they get it. Therefore, wealth as a matter of itself, as a means of protecting older years, is necessary to a measure, but is not a solution to anything. An individual can point out the fact that he is financially independent for the rest of his life and still live a completely worthless existence, because the independence is nothing unless he has something in himself to use independence for, some dedication that previously he has been unable to fulfill. But now, with financial freedom and leisure, he can do those things which are important. If he has no sense of importance, then the retirement period is going to be a heavy burden on him, or a cause of endless restlessness. I know people who are in retirement, and we have them on our mailing list, some of them. And these people change address sometimes 3 or 4 times a year. Not because they have to, but because they get tired of where they are. They want some other change, something else to think about. And the only thing they can think about, some of them, is a change of address. Now, this moves in on people. They don't think of it in this way. And yet it comes finally to these conditions, these situations. So as we go along, let us never for a moment plan or look forward to a retirement that is going to be insignificant. Many persons become so bored and so wearied with the job they have that it seems to them that retirement is going to be a blessed state. Yet very shortly thereafter, the problems begin to develop. Years ago, when many of our generation were thinking these things through, it was assumed by insurance and actuarial groups that the average person retiring would not live more than 5 years after retirement. They would not live longer because the incentives for life would be taken away. Boredom would set in. There would be no call upon the person to do important things, no fulfillments of anything except a desperate effort to waste his own time. And this becomes unendurable. So against this type of pattern, there is the person who finds that to keep young, to keep healthy, to have a significant period of years ahead, there must be a constructive, purposeful program. And all incidental forms of time-killing gradually kill the individual. He knows before he makes these foolish moves that they are not important. He knows that he is killing time. He is wasting the precious opportunities to complete or unfold the purposes of his own life. It is much better for him, therefore, to consider an immediate adjustment to some purpose that is worthwhile and useful to him. Now, of course, there are some individuals whose health problems limit activities. Some are not able to continue indefinitely. But where this is true, then there can be various internal forms of significant activity. The individual can continue to grow in spite of the fact that there may be limitations upon his physical activities. The first thing we have to think about then, probably, is to find out, if we possibly can, what there is inside of ourselves, the development of which would be most meaningful. Also, what line of research in our own characters would give us the greatest faith with which to live for the future? What can we do to take away from ourselves all blank ends, all dead projects, everything that is not meaningful? Some find new careers, and these folks generally do quite well. I know several careers that have been built up by the simple fact that the person continued to recognize social responsibility, and that retirement from job does not mean that the individual has fulfilled his social obligations, that the individual is responsible for his contributions to society to the last day of his life. Several people that I know of have made actual and interesting side activities. Some have done research projects in fields of interest. One that I know or knew for many years, after retirement, took up botany and became an authority on medical herbs and things of this nature, and finally wrote an important book on the subject. This person kept on trying to be of service to society and found a program that was probably more intensive than they had worked during their working years, but a program to which they gave their heart and soul, and for which they gained a good reputation and a realization of contribution to society. Another individual might go in a different direction, but as long as the individual lives, he must to be useful, or he will ultimately hate himself. This problem of being useful is often a matter of opportunity. The place where we are, the things that are happening around us, become the basis of useful contributions. There are many projects to which individuals can associate themselves. There are various enterprises, charitable, educational, cultural, that ask for help, that need people to do things, not necessarily just to give money, but to help to make a project succeed by personal time and through personal dedication. And if a person who is retired from business commits themselves to some type of a regular program of giving a number of days or a number of hours to a project in each week, we'll find that this particular procedure lengthens life and increases the sense of personal integrity. Wherever there's nothing pressing,
must press on to find something. If he does not, he is going to damage his own state of future life. Now, I've known a number of persons who, under the pressure of retirement or under the pressure of fatigue, which has been associated with retirement, have done very foolish things. They have decided that they are too tired to do anything.